Aloha, everybody. It's Jeremy Vaney, your host of What of the Experience, what you're listening to right now. Thank you, by the way, for listening. This is another solo episode. I originally wanted to do this and hope to still do this as a reading of listener questions and comments to sort of form an arc or a story. Or a question. Maybe question is the best way to put it. Which is, what is it that we're pulling through myth? But I wanted to do this weeks ago, and then I didn't. So we'll see if all the clever things I had to say about that come back to me, or if it just falls flat. But first, I want to answer subscriber questions and comments regarding last week's show. Starting with the last one first, from Carolee, which is, so Jeremy, I was curious about the current volcanic activity in Hawaii and pulled this up today. And it is an earthquake update from a YouTube user called Dutch Sense. And she goes on and says, wow, I don't know what to believe. Could he be right about the USGS? To tell you the truth, it would not surprise me at all. What she's talking about is the United States Geological Survey, the scientists of which are in charge of looking at, for instance, Kilauea, which is going off right now here on the very island I am living. And the video, I've seen, this is the second video of his I watched. It's funny that she asked me this about this guy because my wife Carol and I just happened upon his previous video. And we're really intrigued. And what it is this super smart person who has just every available model of earthquake activity from, you know, various government sources, not just in the U.S., but Canada and elsewhere, I believe, and is seeing patterns in the earthquake activity and volcanic activity globally. And is able to, according to him at least, predict sort of where they're going to occur next and when the next big one is, and also making the connection between earthquake activity and well drilling. So not just fracking, but in the case of Hawaii, there is a geothermal plant, which this line of fissures in the ground are sort of, well, I think they're there already. I was going to say they're going toward, but they're kind of already there. So then the question becomes, did this geothermal plant in some way inspire this through digging thousands and thousands of feet into the island to tap magma as a source of energy to sell to the power plant to bring the cost of energy down for us, which never actually happened. Didn't actually bring anything down for us because that's how business works. They lie, right? At least big business, and that's what this is about. And so the question that he poses is, the USGS, are they in the pockets of big business because they can't possibly be completely funded by the government? And in this video that she is asking about, he's talking about a couple of earthquakes in California that were downgraded by a factor of something like 10,000. So they downgraded them. I'm not sure if the other countries downgraded them or not, but he's basically using this to say, look, they saw what these earthquakes were, but they don't want anyone to make the connection between these earthquakes and these oil fields. So they've downgraded them and they've actually moved the epicenter, away from where they originally had it, near these oil fields. And so it's all a conspiracy. And I think he's going a little off the deep end for me with this, for the simple fact that if there was a conspiracy like that, why would they post it in the first place, right? Like, why do this at all if they're just going to have to keep correcting themselves and then make it look as though there's a conspiracy? I mean, that just seems, to me, that's like the NASA thing of like, okay, NASA's flying around in outer space. And but there are all these UFOs on the feed, so they have to keep cutting the feed or explaining away these UFOs. Well, if that's true, if they really are alien in nature, these UFOs, then why would NASA be doing this at all? the answer is they're not alien in nature. They have more mundane answers, unfortunately. We just don't like to hear them a lot of the time.
We'll be back after this.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
This is Whitley Strieber. You love the experience just as much as I do, and you listen to it just as much, I'll bet, as I do. And did you know that you can get the whole run of the experience if you're a subscriber to UnknownCountry.com? That's right. From the first show on, you can download and keep them for yourself, for your own private use. This is copyrighted material, of course. And there's lots and lots more as well. This website is well worth your time and your money. There's nothing like UnknownCountry.com in the world. So go to UnknownCountry.com right now and subscribe today. Listen to the whole show and download all of this wonderful Jeremy material. It is very special stuff.
Whitley Strieber, one of the great authors of our time. War Day changed the way we think about nuclear war. Communion led millions to realize that they had encountered the visitors. Superstorm gave a word to the world that has become the byword of our time. The Key is among the most prophetic books ever written. And where can you get inside the mind that created all this? On UnknownCountry.com, where Whitley's life stories, his powerful meditations, his books, Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, and others are available in audio format, and so much more exclusive Whitley Strieber material. Join Whitley on the path to tomorrow. How? Subscribe to UnknownCountry.com today.
Welcome back.
I think it is just the human factor, but I think the real conspiracy, if you want to look for a conspiracy in all of this, is the human factor. And the human factor is that they don't really know anything, that this science isn't really a science, it doesn't seem, from any of the spokespeople I've seen on TV, because we have these updates about Kilauea. And these scientists come on, and they try to inspire this sense of control over the situation, but it's clear to us that they're not actually in control of anything. For instance, this geothermal plant didn't even have a plan for this. So you're drilling and tapping magma on a live volcano, and you don't have a plan for when the lava comes to your door, and you've got these poisonous gases on your facility and down in the wells, and you don't know what to do about that. And it's clear that these scientists, what they're actually doing is monitoring. That's all they can do, is monitor the situation. They can't tell you what's going on. You know, they can guess. They can say, well, this kind of looks like maybe this is new magma meeting old magma that's been sitting there for a while since the last flow. I mean, they can do the guesswork, but that's all they can do, because there just isn't enough instrumentation. There's not enough knowledge about how these volcanoes work. And then the geothermal plant is its own dilemma, because these idiots clearly sold a bill of goods, like they do with the BP oil pipeline, where they're like, yeah, sure, let's drill a pipeline into the ocean with no plan for when that leaks, because why would it leak? That would cost extra to be able to fix it. So we're not gonna do the R&D on that. And it's funny, you rarely see a spokesperson for this geothermal place. In fact, I haven't seen one on TV at all, except for video coming out of a community sort of town hall meeting over there, where a spokesman spoke early on. Other than that, you see government officials speaking on their behalf and saying, This company has taken way too much time. They've been dragging their feet in clearing out the pentane, which is the gas that could go off and be bad were it to touch lava. So we're going to take it upon ourselves, and we're gonna speed this process along. Even though it's a private entity, the governor has signed himself a declaration that he can do whatever he wants. So in one sense, that's good because this needs to be taken care of. In another sense, who's funding this? The taxpayers who are left alive after the pentane goes off. It's never spoken about, and I don't see reporters asking about it. You know, where is at least VP did a publicity campaign to try to look good in the midst of their debacle. These guys aren't even doing that. It's just, well, wiped our hands of it. The government's taking care of this. And maybe ultimately that's what we need. But it's just odd. So you've got these government officials saying, well, we're contacting experts in California about what to do. Should we cap the wells with concrete? Should we pour water into them? You know, what do you do kind of thing? It's like, and you're doing this now, you know, like lava is creeping over there to the door. And they're like, well, we've settled on at least killing the wells by pouring water into them. We'll get to that next week or the week after kind of thing. You know, they're on Hawaii time with this. So all of that to me is, if you're looking for a conspiracy, it's the conspiracy that scientists, that if you look at somebody who is studious in a lab coat, again, it's the same conspiracy as with ufology. It's the conspiracy of our own expectations based on presentation and I almost said fashion sense, maybe that too. If somebody gets up there and is usually white and speaks in a very steady tone in their suit and tie or their lab coat and their glasses and they tell you what they know, it's very easy to see past the fact that they haven't told you anything at all. What they've told you is what they've observed, and then when reporters ask them questions, usually the answer is, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. But it's all about panic control. And in fact, the last one I watched from yesterday, another government employee guy got up there speaking for the governor, and most of his shtick was chastising reporters for not letting the world know that this is taking place on a small portion, well, it's a large portion, but a portion of the island. And so tourists in other parts of the island who have booked hotels in other parts of the island, like Kona, for instance, because that's the big tourist destination. In fact, he mentions Kona. They're canceling. And so he blames it on the media for making it seem as though all of Hawaii is on fire and not even differentiating between islands, the fact that there are different islands in Hawaii. So the point is, you're killing tourism, dude. Please let the people know they should keep coming to this island. Not sure how I feel about that, because while it is true that the on-ground devastation is taking place in a specific location, the gas that's being emitted right now, which is sulfur dioxide, is everywhere, including Kona, because the wind is blowing it there. It smells like sulfur right now here. I mean, we've got the windows shut. Because if the wind isn't blowing a certain way, then we're getting it. And, you know, it's an irritant in your eyes and your lungs, and in high doses, it's deadly. And the ash is actually blowing not far from where I live. There's a town called Pahala that is just devastated by ash right now and the sulfur dioxide. Na'alehu is technically our town. It's where our post office box is, but we're far enough away from it that we're not even feeling the effects. But going into town to the post office, it's clear they're suffering too from this, you know, Uber Vog, let's call it. So I guess if you're going to tell people, oh yeah, keep coming to the island, well, shouldn't you prepare them for one, it's going to smell like sulfur, most likely, if you're in Kona at least. It may irritate you and give you asthma. I mean, I assume it would be the equivalent maybe of going to California, back before they had real controls on the smog. It would probably be like that, So people did, right? People went to California all the time despite the smog, and so you can do that here. But, man, just be upfront and honest about that. Don't, you know, not everything is about money, and especially here. And if you want to look at the metaphysical aspect of what's going on, that might partially be the point of this. People talk a lot about Madame Pele and the obviousness of Leilani Estates being the place where this popped up, you know, and just destroyed Leilani Estates. What's Leilani Estates? Well, according to our Hawaiian friends, Leilani Estates is as close as you could get without a gate to a gated community in Puna, which is a type of exclusivity that is generally frowned upon. The sense of isolation and exclusivity, these are not Hawaiian notions. These are things that outsiders bring, and it was really exemplified there. So that's gone. And then what's next? Well, the geothermal plant. Pele very much did not want to be tapped. And in fact, there were huge protests. In fact, most people, I think, I just saw a pro-geothermal video. Pro in the sense that what they want to do is actually make sure that the people are paying less money for it, but keep it. Less money for energy, I should say, but keep the geothermal stuff. This, of course, was made before the destruction of the place. But the premise of it is that a lot of people in Hawaii don't even realize there is a geothermal plant because there were heavy demonstrations against ever building such a thing here to the extent that most people thought they had defeated it, and they didn't. So since it's here, why don't we actually use it to our benefit the way it was meant to in the first place, or pitched? So if you're looking for the Pele metaphysical route, this makes perfect sense. It is about overpopulating in the wrong ways in her land and about tapping her as an energy source, which she does not want. Of course, if it turns out that the geothermal plant itself with its wells is a factor in this having happened in the first place, well, if you're not into the Pele metaphysics thing, you can at least know that they are a factor in this having happened in a very physical, you know, concrete way. But the jury is still out on that in a concrete way. But anyway, that's what's going on here. And so getting back to this YouTube video, again, this guy who goes by, what is it, Dutch Synths. He does that thing that unfortunately paranoid people tend to do, which is goes on a tirade about how he's the only one who knows any of this stuff, and the people from the USGS, you think they're not watching my YouTube videos? Of course they are. They know what I'm about. They hate this. They hate that I'm speaking to you. You know, maybe he's saying this as an advertising ploy, the way, you know, a dope like Alex Jones would, you know, feed his audience the sense that he alone is the arbiter of secret knowledge that the man doesn't want you to know, but, you know, he needs you to help him to stay afloat because they could take him out at any moment. You know, that kind of, in Alex Jones' case, I hope, fake paranoia as an act. I think that might be going on here with this Dutch Synths guy. I'm not sure. But it does kind of, this last video kind of turned me off to his work, actually. Because I thought it was a step too far. But I'm going to keep watching because I was intrigued by the last video for sure. I just think it's much like in ufology. Again, boy, the parallels. It's so easy to be onto something and really be onto something and then step over that line and say, I've got it all figured out. They know I've got it figured out. They're on to me. So I demand to be heard. Why isn't anyone listening to me? Maybe this is where I am a scientist at heart, which is like, slow and steady wins the race, everybody. Let's not jump the gun on what we presume to know based on what we have discovered here.
We'll be back after this.
The Afterlife Revolution is getting great reviews. There's a tremendous, lovely response to it, and I'm so pleased and humbled because it's an effort on the part of myself and Anne. And I love Anne so much. I want her to succeed in this incredible task that she has undertaken of returning and communicating across the bridge between the worlds. And she's really doing it. This is a real thing that's happening. Listen to some of these reviews. Anne and Whitley Strieber lay out their life's work in the most exquisitely beautiful manner. This moving book comes from the heart, the unified heart of two people who have dedicated their lives in this realm and the next to revealing the nature of consciousness as it makes its sojourn in this human form. That's just one. Here's another. I love this book. It's a wonderful read, especially if you lost somebody very close to you. Just incredible. Here's another one. The book shows you how to grow your soul, for lack of a better term. Through Anne's insight, Whitley shares invaluable information that could only be from the other side. So take it seriously. Go to Amazon and get Afterlife Revolution. Go on to Amazon and get the Afterlife Revolution in paperback or in Kindle format. And if you have questions or thoughts, write me at whitley@strieber.com. I'm right here. I'm ready to answer anything you ask to help you in any way I can, always.
Visit unknowncountry.com every day to get the latest news from the edge and open your mind to the high strangeness of the out there section of the website. You can follow us on Twitter simply by following Whitley Strieber, and all the latest material will be pushed to your Twitter feed. Plus, you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and get the latest delivered right to your inbox. UnknownCountry.com is the biggest and most popular website of its kind in the world because it has so much to offer. Open your mind. Dare the edge. Subscribers to UnknownCountry.com get so much more. A new special interview every week. Commercial-free dreamland. Above all, access to our vast archive that includes many of Whitley Strieber's most famous books in audio form. Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Superstorm, and there's even more. The Dreamland Archive goes back 10 years. It's a treasure trove of unusual information, literally unparalleled in the world, and can offer you hours and hours of truly mind-opening listening pleasure. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab today. Join us. We need you, and you need us.
Welcome back.
Okay. And now, if we circle back up to the very first post, HG says, "Hey, Jeremy, I haven't even gotten into the show yet, and have come to the obvious realization that Madame Pelé says, 'Not in my backyard, you rocket people.'" And, you know, I tend to agree. And I wonder, you know, she's also the deity of this volcano here that I live on, Mauna Loa, which is where they were looking to build this thing. Gosh, if we had said yes, would she have erupted Mauna Loa? I don't know, but I think that the notion of not in my backyard, or of moderating our advancement, is just true. And I think it is so obviously true that you don't even need a deity in the equation. I think just the aliveness of the volcano itself dictates what can go on. And the more man decides that he has dominion over nature, the more divorced he is from his own nature, the more we see that nature per se really does have the ability to say, that's cute, all your systems and your denials and stuff, but flick, you know. Michael R. writes, "If I understand," and this gets back to last week's episode and the week before, the two-parter, "If I understand, you are saying that there are two ways of thinking, one of which is always looking for solutions to problems that it's created, and another that's whole and therefore isn't involved in this never-ending quest for resolution. The problem-based mind has got us to where we are, which isn't sustainable, and any attempt to find a solution to that is just more of the same. I get that, but it's hard to imagine the alternative you're describing as a way of organizing society. Isn't it possible to live in both modes of thinking slash being? The problem to me is that we spend all of our time in a discursive, me-based way of thinking and being. In reality, we live simultaneously in a world of plurality, where we are all individuated and separate on the one hand, and at the same, there is a level of our existence that transcends all of that. So to me, the quote-unquote answer isn't to live exclusively in one realm or the other, but to live in balance between those two realms. Well, let me add a little clarity to what I was saying, which is that what you're talking about is trading one for the other. And what I'm talking about is simply seeing the futility of the self so deeply that the brain stops projecting the self. And when the brain stops projecting the self, this transcendental consciousness you're talking about becomes the consciousness of the brain and of the body. And so if that quote-unquote other part, the mode of thinking and being in society and all that, if that is not an illusion, if that is still a necessary illusion, let's put it that way, if it's still going to be there, then it's going to be there. Because it's transcend and include, not transcend and exclude, right? So whatever is healthy and proper about the sense of self that you have just, that the brain has just done away with, the proper proportion of it will come back. It's just, it's not going to be in exclusive control the way it is now, blocking out truth, keeping it as a hypothetical, having it pierce you every now and then, but then you go back to normal and then you've got this knowledge, this new knowledge, and on you go, accumulating dead truths as knowledge. What I'm saying is, well, yeah, just that. The death of self actually leads to a recontextualization of self so that all is in proper alignment. And so whatever needs to stay, stays. It's not either or. It's what is healthy about the self remains. But I think saying that out loud runs the risk of people believing that there's something they can do about it. But it's not like you really have to take the quote-unquote leap of faith, or the brain does, not you. You can't do anything about it. So the brain has to just see this and die and kill its sense of self for true self to be the case. And whatever was true about brain self or heart self is just recontextualized into proper proportion. That's all. Rob Wilkin writes, "It seems to me that we already live between those two realms. We now try to balance our everyday survival with our spiritual or inner whole self. These two modes seem to be in conflict, or at least non-compatible, and not everybody has the same idea of what it means to be whole or how to achieve it. Any ideas on how we can bring the two in balance, especially if Jeremy is right, and we are mired in our way of mind?" Well, as Jeremy just said, no, you can't do anything about it because you're the one who is the imbalance, right? You're not out of balance and you've got to bring yourself into balance. You are the imbalance. And so when the brain really gets that you are the imbalance goes away and balance becomes the case. Maybe that's a better way to put it. So balance is there when imbalance is not. You are imbalance as you are now. But that doesn't mean that when balance becomes the case, there is no sense of self, no identity. It means that it is perfectly in balance, according to truth, not according to what was formerly you. Solange, I think. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Solange? I don't know. So long, suckers. Jeremy, this is a brilliant show. Yes, thank you. You are utterly correct. Oh, music to my ears. I feel, as I've had enough experiences of oneness to know that. However, I'm still, quote-unquote, not there in an ongoing way. What's keeping me going is working with a group of people who know this and are doing practices to awaken. Awakening is truly a mystery, but I do believe we can help it along. Do you agree? No, I don't agree. And I think it's funny the way you put this. What's keeping me going? That's correct. What is keeping you going is working with a group of people who know this, who know, you know, and are doing practices. Knowing, practice, these are not words that apply. They apply to other things. And in fact, you can have senses of oneness in various ways, and senses of interconnection in various ways that are not this ultimate death of self. So surely these practices are real, but they're going to keep you within the realm of thought, because these outbreaks of seemingly oneness-y type experiences are still within the realm of thought. It's a trick. It's a trap. And the reason I say that is because inevitably they give you a context for it, right? A practice gives you a context for what you're experiencing, so you're not experiencing the unfiltered, unvarnished thing. Not unlike, again, when I was a kid and I read the Jesus-y prayer and had the feeling of absolution. I mean, the fact is, what would have been the transcendent thing would have been to give up to nothing, not give over to something. But I didn't know that, so I read this prayer, and it did something, and I felt it, and it was real. But it was contextualized for me, so it kept me here. Now, this is unfortunately, perhaps, all individual. There is no group that can help you. And there is no along, help you along. See, that the sense of time is right there in the premise. It implies this ever-unfolding path. There is no getting to the end, which is the death of self. It's following this along until we finally figure out what this death of self means. It's like, no, this is very obvious what it means. Your brain right now is trying to sustain itself in the face of the fact that it needs to shut down the self. Okay. Not So Much Dreamer has a really long post that I will not read all of, because I just want to focus on this one little bit here, which is the question of how is awakening different from being? And what we're talking about is understanding from the first person point of view of being, that is being coming through and as you, versus not, right? And so versus not can be a multitude of things. It can be understanding spirit as guides or gurus or Christs or that sort of thing. Or it can be understanding spirit as a thing out there doing to you, puppeteering, commanding. Our sense of being with a capital B, which is the same as spirit with a capital S, which is the same as formless awareness, which is the same as nothingness, ultimate consciousness, whatever word you like to use, our sense of that comes in many flavors of it not being who we are, of it being an it, divorced from us, of duality. And there's only one flavor of oneness, right? So there are tons of meditations and schools of thought and philosophy and yada yada that will give you all sorts of other ways except for that sustained oneness that you are as the point of view of spirit. They will not ever give you that. They're not meant to. They won't tell you that, but that's, you know, they all fall within the realm of thought, within the realm of time, within the realm of becoming, within the realm of awakening. And so when you say awakening, well, when I say awakening, I'm talking about an instantaneous transformation. I'm not talking about a process through time. It is an instantaneous transformation out of time into timeless, formless being. Which is doing its own thing. What is it doing? It's being. What is it being? It's being all things. It's being you right now, whether you know it or not. So essentially, this transcendent thing that I'm talking about is being that point of view, that ultimate point of view, which includes you, because you are a part of that point of view. It is being you right now, whether you know it or not. So the difference is that you know it, but not just like as a knowledge, that you are it. You are that point of view. And so duality and separation and all of that isn't quite as dual and separate anymore. It's more like, as I've made the probably gross analogy, of a fly's segmented eye, where you're seeing through all these cameras, all these lenses at once. So you recognize thyself both as all of those things and all of those things as the one thing that you are. So it's both and. It's improv. It's yes and. There is no anymore. It's yes and. You become a different sense of what being is in this world. It's not just that you learn something new or that you feel something different. It's that you are complete. Or are you complete, non-subscriber? Because this episode goes on for about another half hour. So yeah, why don't you click that subscribe tab and get the full episode, get all of the back episodes, and get all of Dreamland and everything Whitley has to offer here at unknowncountry.com for a nominal fee. Otherwise, I will see you back here next week for the episode I was going to do. Yeah, spoiler alert, if you decide to buy a month of Dreamland because you're excited to hear what we're pulling through myth. I never actually get to that this episode. So there's your fair warning. There's your spoiler and your fair warning. I just go on and on. I blather, but in a really good way. and by the end, perhaps I've gotten to something important regarding ufology of all things. Perhaps it is worth clicking that subscribe tab after all. All right. Either way, I will see you next week. And if you would like to be a guest on the show, please write to me, Jeremy@unknowncountry.com, and we will set that up. Take care, everybody.